And this is, you know, it's a, similar to these we have today, but obviously that's where we get, you know, this is where we have gotten our system here in the United States. And then jumping forward to the United States, we have inherited many systems, like I said, one of which was the French Arpent system, which basically the idea of the French Arpent system is this is for agricultural purposes, so you can see the Mississippi River here. The idea was that everyone had access to water for agriculture. So the lots are often long and thin, but everyone abuts on the waterfront. And then another system in the United States that we're familiar with here in California is, of course, the rancho system, the Spanish and Mexican ranchos. This is an actual diseño, which was the map that was made by the person who was requesting land from the governor. They basically made a map, which was called a diseño, and they made a petition, which was called an expediente, and they submitted both of these things to the governor, and then the governor approved their land. So these were often made by lay people. You can see this is, you know, I hate to use the word cartoonish, but it is somewhat. I find it quite beautiful, but, all sorts of interesting things. But interestingly enough, the features are important. You can see there's a mountain ridge line that's surrounding the property. These are streams and trees. These are all monuments that actually played a role in defining what that person would own eventually.
Did I say south sub?
What's that?
South sub.
Yeah, south sub, north sub. It's a Caltrans. And then, basically, actually, at this point, if you could bring up the website,
sure.
The County Surveyor's website. I just want to show you a map of Santa Barbara County. That shows some sectionalized land versus the ranchos that were approved in the county. The other system that we have in the United States is, of course, sectionalized land, which was the rectangular survey system first proposed by Thomas Jefferson, intended to basically dispose of large chunks of land.
Which way are we going?
You want to go, sorry, one more presentation. Like I said, this is just going to show the section lines and the ranchos in Santa Barbara County. Once the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was approved and the lands, basically in the western United States, that had been granted ranchos prior to becoming U.S. states, basically those people had to reapply to the U.S. government and have their patents reapproved. Some of them were approved, most of them were approved, some of them were not. So. It's not working. Can you bring up the grant for grant standards?
Yeah. Nice.
So that's a little history about land surveying. When a land surveyor, this just shows the ranchos that were approved versus the sections that came later. Simple graphic page, let me bring it up. So once a private land surveyor has contracted with a client to retrace a boundary in the field, the first thing that he wants to do, obviously, is do a little bit of research. That takes, you know, that may take many forms, such as a title report or a chain of title. I'm sure Alan Martin touched on that earlier. Another thing might be, deeds or the grantor-grantee index, which I really just wanted to show you guys the work that we're doing here in Santa Barbara County, the great work that our assessor and recorder's office is doing and providing this stuff online. Although, of course, we're not here with us.
We just put an Ethernet cord.
Yeah.
I'll keep going, keep search for it.
Anyway, so a Lance Rivera, he might order a title report or a chain of title from a title company. He might simply go to the recorder's office and pull a deed, or he might need to use the grantor-grantee index to basically retrace to the original deed, which is always really what you want. We also have the tax assessor's rolls or the historical indices. You know, there are tax assessor's maps. Yeah, I just wanted to show the grantor-grantee index like we have here. You can search basically by name. It's a little different than the interface I'm used to. But basically, yeah, you can search for grantor-grantee if you want to bring up the assessor's maps as well. Yeah, we can search by parcel, we can search by street number, and these will all lead you to the deeds eventually. So this is all great information. If you can jump to our website now, please.
Sure.
And the other thing a private surveyor wants to do is he wants to research the maps, obviously. And this is our website, and we have a GIS application that I wanted to show everyone. It actually makes it very easy.
SIS?
Yeah, you got it.
Like working in our office.
Where we have recorded maps available. You can search by, again, you can search by address, you can search by APN to find your location, and then we have layers overlaid over the aerial imagery that basically show records of survey, parcel maps, track maps, corner records, all the types of record information that a land surveyor would want to pull up prior to going out in the field to retrace a boundary.
I think it's because we're wide right now. I got to edit.
That's okay. We'll come back to it. You want to jump back to the
PowerPoint?
Yes, please. So I'll move on to, once a land surveyor has finished his research, he's basically going to come across, he's going to have in his hands a legal description and potentially a map. And these are the documents that he's going to use in the field to lay out the boundary. Now, there are five basic types of legal descriptions. These are meets and bounds. These are probably terms that you're all going to be familiar with. Meets and bounds. Meets obviously being bearings and distances, and bounds meaning boundaries or monuments, both physical and legal. I'll talk about the difference between those in a second. The second basic type is simply a reference to adjoining parcels, something like bounded on the west by the land of Smith, on the east by the land of Jones, something like to that effect. The third part would be sectionalized land, also called aliquot part, the northeast corner of the southeast corner, blah, blah, blah. The fourth would be lot and block reference, lot 7, block 2 of track map, so on. And then the fifth basic type is a strip description, which really is mostly used for right-of-ways, utility easements, things such as that. Once we have a legal description that we're then ready to lay out in the field, there are a few things to consider before we actually proceed with the work. And at this point, I do want to make an important note. about boundary retracement and the role of the land surveyor. The role of the land surveyor in boundary retracement is really to retrace the boundary as it was originally surveyed, not to correct any errors in the original survey. Basically the principle is that we follow in the footsteps of the land surveyor who came before us. That means if he made a mistake and put the boundary in the wrong position and set a monument, that's where the boundary is. It's not our job to put it in a different place. It's our job to retrace it as it was originally surveyed. And that's a very important distinction when it comes to mistakes, errors, anything. Go ahead.
You always see on the survey map, though, that it says boundary found, not accepted, boundary found, accepted.
That happens. The thing about surveying is it's much more an art than a science. There are no two situations that are ever exactly the same. A lot of the principles that I'm laying out today will apply most of the time, but not all the time. Like I said, I can't stress it enough that no two situations are ever the same. It really is much more an art than a science. So moving on. So when you're retracing a boundary, there are a few considerations to make before you begin. One is how was it originally created? Now that may be either simultaneous or sequential conveyance. Simultaneous, think track map. All the lots were created at the same time. Sequential is basically over time. I own a large piece, I give you a small piece, and then that person gives away another smaller piece, and so on and so forth. The difference really between the two for the land surveyor when you're retracing it is that in a simultaneous conveyance, anytime you find an error, that error has to be distributed between all the lots. It's a proportional retracement. For example, if I find that a lot, that the front of a lot is supposed to be 50 feet and instead it's 45 feet, then I have to remeasure every lot along within that block to determine what the proportional error really is. And then I have to distribute that accordingly. Whereas in a sequential conveyance, the senior lot, or the one that existed first in time, gets, in the case of a gap or an overlap, the senior lot gets the excess, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Without going into too much detail, I don't want to be short on time. But basically, it's a junior-senior right thing. The senior parcel always gets the excess. The junior receives whatever's left over. That's the essence of that. And then moving on to sources of error, please. This is the second consideration before you begin your survey. Sources of error, there are three basic types. There are mistakes, human errors such as transposing numbers, that's pretty simple. Systematic errors, these are errors that basically are biases within the system. This can be a natural error such as which is caused by an environmental condition. There's a variation in wind, temperature. These things affect scientific equipment. Now the error is going to be minute, but it is error that needs to be considered. There's an instrumental error. This is poorly calibrated equipment, damaged equipment. There's also personal error, which is basically limitations of human senses. The human eye can only see gradations of such a fine amount. There are also random errors, which are basically accidental errors that are beyond the control of the observer. For example, when you're interpolating numbers, if I'm trying to read a measurement on a tape measure, for example, and I'm estimating in between values, some people will always estimate high, some will estimate low. Now, these errors, like I said, they're always present, but they're usually self-canceling, so they're really not necessary to consider. Now, the reason we have to consider error is, or the reason we know that error is present is, I'm sorry, because we know the error is present, land surveyors have what we call controlling calls. And we have a superiority of calls. Next slide, please. And this is to deal with any type of error or mistakes or any disagreement in what we find. And if we find disagreement in the field between the record value and what we're measuring, there is a superiority of calls. Now, the superiority of calls, the first one is monuments. Those are physical monuments, whether they're natural or artificial. A natural monument is a permanent object, like a river, a stream, a beach, etc. An artificial monument is things made by man. You know, a half-inch pipe in the ground, a redwood post, a scribe on a sandstone rock. But those are the first superiority of call. So a monument in the ground is controlling if it can be found, if it can be determined to be in its original position. The second superiority of call is a monument, physical or record, that's not recited in the original description, but is disclosed on other records. The third would be the recital of a boundary of record, again, the west line, the Smith, or something such as that. The fourth would be a recited distance and or bearing tied to a record corner or lines not on instant property. In other words, a tie to a corner on an adjacent property. The fifth would be a distance on a boundary. The sixth would be a bearing on a boundary or the angle between lines. And the seventh and last superior of call is an area. And then, lastly, depending on what the land surveyor finds in the field, and depending on what the law requires, we may file one of several different types of records, those being corner records, records of survey, subdivision maps, lot line adjustments, or voluntary mergers. And these would be the documents then that come to your office that force a change in the cadastre. So, and that's it.
Do we want to try to see if the slide is up there? Or see if the
if you want to see the.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah, so if you want to zoom in to our areas. So go back, this is the GIS system that our office has created. Does anybody have any questions or anything while we're waiting?
I was just kind of curious what the relationship is between your office and the assessor's office.
By relationship, what do you mean?
Do they occasionally rely on the county surveyor's office to assist with problems? I think in some counties there's a clear disconnect. You know, that our job is our job and your job is your job, and we're not going to work together. And then I think in some counties there's some kind of.
I think we have a pretty good relationship. I'm not going to say that we work together often, but yes, we do. Certainly, when there's an issue that the other office can help out with, it's a two-way street.
I think in the past, we used to have some issues about who should be doing the base map, the surveyor or the assessor's office. And I think that is, and at some point that quieted down, and we then developed a very good relationship with our assessor's office. And I'm just holding up because, you know, our recorder's office has put all the recorded maps on the internet. And they have also have this indexing program, and both of them we find invaluable. We know it's cut down on the surveyor's work because they tell us a lot not having to hand out as many recorded maps to the public. They get them themselves. And I was saying it is much better for us to be able to just get them off of the internet as easily as we can get our assessor's maps off the internet. And one of the main things that it does is that where someone may say, you know, I can either look farther into this problem and go get another map, or I can just stop now because I don't want to walk down the hall and get a paper map. Now that they're right at their fingertips, I think it's a lot. It's much easier and more likely that we'll bring up a map and look at it when we're doing our assessment, or when we're doing our assessment mapping. So the
really useful thing about this is, in this system and in anything, is when you have polygons and hyperlinks to the survey. It's immediate. Our survey has all the maps online, so we can actually pull these layers in with our maps when we're doing our work. Light up parcel maps and go right to them.
And the parcel layer in this GIS system was actually created by the county assessor's office. So it's a combined effort.
And by and large, there was a the dilemma of whether the surveyor had to make a great concession in that when they were doing their record, say they were making a polygon of their record of survey on a property, and it was going to be an overlay on the assessor's page, of course those they didn't match. And the question was, is do they leave what they basically probably cogoed in terms of on their record of survey, or do they go ahead and match us? It may seem strange, but it is much easier for people to look at it. And they agreed, they decided they would match it to our parcel boundaries. And rather than use their cogoed line work. And it seems like a step back, but it certainly makes it much easier for the reader when he's trying to figure out what maps cover what, if they follow our boundaries. So,
you can see we have a hyperlink to the image, so you can basically just bring the image up. And I just want that's our location. I was just going to show you guys.
It works great when it's on a good, on a faster network, but.
And it's much faster than going down the hall or looking for a map somewhere else.
Yeah.
And saving everybody time.
Yes, it does. Much time.
Okay. Okay.